Good morning, everybody. Well, good afternoon. By the time you hear this, you are listening to Dark to Light, featuring just me today, Frankie Val on the drums. Tracy is indisposed, but I'm going to fill in the best I can for a little while just to make sure that you have a little something to listen to, and I hope that I do both Tracy and I justice over here in Dark to Light land. All right. So, sitting back, we're just going to take a look at some of the things that I have gathered for you today. A little bit that I did last night on my show that I thought would be nice to repeat here because it has to do with the Maxwell trial going on and other bigger issues that should always be kept in mind when you're watching a situation handled with such meticulous, I don't know how to say it, but it's been insulated, it's completely controlled, it's a controlled demolition. So I know that there's some people out there hoping that this was going to be the trial that busts open the whole game here, but it's obvious that we're not going to get that, and it's going to be one big case of blue balls, at least to me. I know that Tracy is reserving her opinion on things until it all comes to a close, but you know me, I'm just going to put it on out there and see what comes back. All right, well, first thing up I want to talk about is Alec Baldwin. So I was waiting for this to come out last night, an exclusive with George Stephanopoulos and his Lego Man hair. Alec Baldwin exclusive. The trigger was not pulled. I didn't pull the trigger. Very confusing. And when I heard that this quote was put out there in the initial promotion of this interview with George Stephanopoulos, I'm wondering, what the hell does he mean? Is he going nuts? But he did say it, and listen to this.
It is a one in a trillion shot, and the gun was in your hand. How do you come to terms with that? It wasn't in the script for the trigger to be pulled.
Well, the trigger wasn't pulled. I didn't pull the trigger.
So you never pulled the trigger?
No. I would never point a gun at anyone and pull a trigger at them, never.
What did you think happened? How did a real bullet get on that set?
I have no idea. Someone put a live bullet in a gun. A bullet that wasn't even supposed to be on the property.
How do you respond to actors like George Clooney who say that every time they were handed a gun, they checked it themselves? Your emotions are so clearly so right there on the surface. You felt shock. You felt anger. You felt sadness.
Oh, God, I just want to punch George Stephanopoulos in a stupid... What the hell is Alec Baldwin talking about? Has anybody even tried to explain this? Or does it just sound as stupid to me as everybody else out there? I hope so, because I would hate to live in a world where this made sense. He didn't pull the trigger. He would never point a gun and pull the trigger. And then he says someone put a live bullet into the gun, a bullet that should never have been on set. All right, how did the bullet leave the gun and hit two people? How did the one bullet leave the gun, hit two people, and killing one of them? This, I just don't understand this. But, so I don't, maybe this is just to prime him for some kind of legal defense. It's just a very bizarre alibi, very bizarre. And this is the life of people like George Stephanopoulos. Which, it's amazing that they make millions of dollars to just do this. You know, after a while, I would feel like such a worthless worm. And this kind of work, going to work in the morning would just not be worth it. It wouldn't be worth the money to do things that are so outrageously weird. And to have to act like this is interesting. And to take these, and to not push back on it. To not push back on it, to ask the questions, to let the person speak, and then to go off into softball questions about emotionalism and how deeply feeling the person that you're interviewing is. It's just all weird. So we'll see where that all goes. I haven't watched the full thing, and I probably won't. But we already got the sound bites that we need. All right, moving on. New York officials confirm 5 cases of COVID. Omicron. I call it Omnicron because it sounds more like a Transformer. And I care just as much about this as I do Transformers. New York officials confirmed 5 cases of Omicron variant in New York City. It's probably not nearly the worst thing being confirmed in New York City over the last couple of weeks. You know, I would much rather take my chances with Omicron than walk down Fifth Avenue alone at midnight. You know, there's a murder variant going around New York City that's far more concerning. There was another NYU grad student was stabbed to death last night, I believe. And another person stabbed, but they're in stable condition. This kind of stuff is going on all over the place. This is far worse. I think that the social decay is far worse than any bug that can go around. You know, we can get through that if we had competent leaders that didn't want to rule the world through the guise of a bug. We can get through that, and we would have already been through that a long time ago if that were the case. But it's not. It's not. One Omicron case was discovered on Long Island and 4 in the boroughs that make up New York City, 2 in Queens, 1 in Brooklyn, and another in the city. New York City Health Commissioner David Chosky said the cases indicated that Omicron was spreading throughout the community, not just in travelers. Governor Whoopsie Hochul assured residents that the discovery of Omicron cases in New York doesn't mean that she will call for widespread lockdowns. It doesn't necessarily mean that, but it's not off the table either. New York City officials have confirmed 5 cases of the COVID Omicron variant in New York City metropolitan area. Governor Kathy Oopsie Hochul announced on Thursday, hours after cases were detected in Minnesota and Colorado. One case was discovered in Suffolk County on Long Island, 4 in New York City, 2 in Queens, 1 in Brooklyn, and another in the city. What the hell does that mean? And another in the city. Minnesota health authorities confirmed the second U.S. case of COVID Omicron earlier Thursday in a resident who recently returned from New York City. So that's what's going on. But I want to play something for you that's very interesting. I believe it to be very interesting. The government of the Isle of Man, which is an island off the coast of like Northern Ireland, somewhere around there. But it's in that British sphere of influence in the Atlantic, the Northern Atlantic. Here is a government official from the Island of Man giving an update on this new Omicron variant. And I want you to listen very close to what he's saying and think about what Geert Vandenbosch has been telling us since the beginning. And for those of you who don't remember who Geert Vandenbosch is, he is a very, very, very well-known and very well-credentialed vaccinologist and virologist. Worked as a director on so many different types of fronts in developing vaccines. He's as pro-vaccine as it comes. Worked with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and so many other organizations to develop and proliferate vaccines. He has been, and people like him have been screaming since the beginning that what we're doing right now with the shots that are being administered around the world needs to stop immediately before something catastrophic happens. And what he was describing is exactly what you're going to hear right now coming from whoever the hell this is in the Isle of Man. Listen.
The current COVID-19 vaccines are in offering protection. We have seen this already during the pandemic with the Delta variant becoming dominant over the Alpha, Beta, and gamma variants. We have always said that the emergence of a new mutation could be a potential trigger point, meaning we have to act and take steps to protect our community. There is still much we do not know about the Omicron variant. The most crucial is that question about how effective the vaccine will be in offering us protection. The greatest concern is that the virus has mutated to such an extent that our immune systems, trained by the vaccine, no longer recognize the virus and no longer trigger an immune response. This sort of variant is known as vaccine escape variant.
This sort of condition is known as immune escape. Immune escape. And that is what he has been talking about and warning about. People like Geert Vandenbosch has been warning about for about a year now, that the path that we are on with these experimental therapies These gene therapies can set us up for immune escape. So not only are you going to put sufficient evolutionary pressure on viruses to mutate and evade whatever you're trying to combat it with, but you are also going to desecrate and decimate the host's natural immune system and natural immune responses so that the immune system is not even kicked into gear. It's called immune escape. Essentially, they're giving us AIDS. That's essentially what this is, AIDS. Now, we had played that one clip from, I forgot, that one scientist from the Frick Institute that was talking about this phenomenon that they were seeing in people who were single vaxxed and then double vaxxed, that every time that they were given a shot of these vaccines, that they call them, that the natural immune system was reduced by certain degrees, one-third, two-thirds, 60%, and you start seeing this more and more. And of course, we were wondering, okay, well, if you're acknowledging this and you are pro-vaccine or pro-mRNA, you are pro what is going on right now, then are you about to admit that we need to stop? That you are seeing general immune function decrease in people who are taking these shots? Are you suggesting we stop? And no. The conclusion they always draw is that we need to keep boosting. So I don't know where this is going, but I think everybody out there can see the direction that we are generally heading in there. I mean, he's telling us this is something that would be considered conspiracy theory if you mentioned immune escape or ADE months ago. You are probably taken down for misleading information on Instagram and Twitter. This is official government announcements now that are coming out that are echoing the warnings that were put out to the world nearly a year ago. Immune escape. So, very interesting. I'm going to do an extended bit on this very soon because I want to cover Gateway Pundit and Gateway Pundit's coverage of Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s new book, in which RFK Jr. actually cites my late friend Liam Sheff, his work in uncovering the kinds of experiments that were going on with AIDS medications inside of New York City, or I should just say NIH-funded orphanages in places like New York City. Gateway Pundit has a problem mentioning Liam Sheff's name, but I don't. So I want to get into that because it gets into this. It gets into this in a big way. It'll be a controversial show. I'll probably have to do that on its own, and I have to figure out a time to do it. But anyway, that'll be forthcoming. On the Jeffrey Epstein front, this is the last thing I want to do in this short little ditty that we're walking through the woods together here. Exclusive. Jeffrey Epstein's access to the Clinton White House laid bare. Visitor logs revealed pedophile visited the former president at least 17 times, including a dozen in 1994, twice in one day on three separate occasions. Visitor logs obtained exclusively by Daily Mail reveal pedophile Jeffrey Epstein visited the White House at least 17 times during Bill Clinton's first term between 1993 and 95. Remember the Franklin scandal, or at least the Franklin scandal that had made its way to the White House. That was happening during Bush 1. So we already had big access. That Nader, the Nader guy, he has had George Nader, the bestiality pedophile, that he had access to every White House since, I believe, Bush 1. So when Clinton came in 92, 93, it was already well established what the culture in Washington, D.C. was being driven by. The documents released as part of a FOIA request show Epstein was admitted as a guest on 14 separate days and on three occasions made two visits in a single day. I guess they had brunch and lunch that day. The vast majority of Epstein's visits were to the West Wing, suggesting he was meeting with the president. The late financier was invited by some of Clinton's most senior advisors and aides, including Robert Rubin, who later served as Clinton's Treasury Secretary. While Epstein's crimes did not become public knowledge until 2006 arrest, the visits would have occurred around the time his alleged madam, Ghislaine Maxwell, was allegedly procuring underage girls for him. According to logs, Epstein was first admitted as a guest in February 25, 1993, just a month after Clinton's inauguration, after being invited by Robert Rubin, at the time an assistant to President for Economic Policy. He later visited on September 29, 1993, for a reception organized by the White House Historical Association after he donated $10,000, which he was photographed attending with Ghislaine Maxwell. Birds of a feather. Birds of a feather, ladies and gentlemen, but that's not even the most of it. A couple days ago, we got this. The FAA accidentally disclosed more than 2,000 flight records associated with Jeffrey Epstein's private jets. As you know, Epstein had a fleet of jets. It wasn't just one. In January 2020, Insider asked the Federal Aviation Administration for all the agency's flight records, including departure and arrival data, associated with fleet of a private jets owned by Jeffrey Epstein. Filed under the Freedom of Information Act, our request seems to have a decent chance of success. The agency in 2011 released its entire database of U.S.-based flights to the Wall Street Journal. In March of 2020, however, the FAA denied our request, saying that the responsive records originate from an investigative file and that therefore they were exempt from disclosure. The agency cited Exemption 7A. What the hell is that? Something just dropped in Aurora's room right above me. I wonder if she threw something. What's there for her to throw? It wasn't her. If she jumped out of the crib, that would have been a much larger bang. Hey Siri, text Lauren.
What do you want to say?
What was that noise? Question mark.
Your message to Lauren. Okay, it's sent.
Let's see what she says. I'll let you guys know. This is live radio, by the way. I always treat it live. But despite the original denial, the FAA inadvertently mailed Insider a portion of Epstein's flight records alongside a correspondence for an unrelated FOIA request earlier that year. The records contain data on 2,300 flights among four private jets registered to Epstein between 1998 and 2020. Most of them had appeared in Insider's searchable database of all known flights connected to Epstein. The new FAA records also reveal 704 previously unknown flights taken by Epstein planes. These include hundreds of trips from a three-year gap in the public record from 2013 to 2016, when the jets' movements were unaccounted for. So the FAA is helping cover up what is probably tens of thousands of flights, which go to show that it wasn't just Jeffrey Epstein feeding his sick, recreational, abusive sexual needs, which, of course, that was one of the perks of his job, and it was a job. He was an asset. But it was also about a business that was being run, in which a fleet of jets were necessary, and this was much larger than that. I want to also bring a little something to you to really drive home what this is all about. Now, that's the FAA. We're talking about the White House access, all right, for people like Epstein and George Nader, and many, many more to be on that. But here is a little something I want to bring you back to. I did last night on my show. This is from 2013, a report from then very, very fat, pudgy-faced Chuck Todd. This was for NBC, I believe, and they're doing a report on a State Department scandal. Allegations of sexual misconduct that had been covered up at the State Department when it was under the control of Hillary Clinton. Take a listen to this.
It's over here, and we are following this breaking news out of Washington. Some serious allegations this morning facing the State Department.
That's right. According to internal State Department memos, the agency might have called off or intervened in investigation into possibly illegal and inappropriate behavior within its ranks, allegedly to protect jobs and avoid scandals. This concerns the time that Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. We want to get right to NBC's Chief White House Correspondent Chuck Todd with the latest. Chuck, good morning to you.
Good morning, Savannah. You know, there's an old saying in Washington that the cover-up is worse than the crime. But in this case, both parts of it are disturbing. Allegations of prostitution and pedophilia, and allegations that those crimes were somehow covered up or not looked into. So the State Department this morning is having to respond to those claims and those investigations of misconduct by State Department officials, including by an ambassador and security agents attached to then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And the allegations are that these investigations were whitewashed, quashed altogether, and that those orders came from high up.
NBC News has obtained documents related to ongoing investigations into some disturbing allegations involving State Department personnel and at least one ambassador. A State Department memo says the ambassador, quote, routinely ditched his protective security detail in order to solicit sexual favors from both prostitutes and minor children. The memo also says a top State Department official directed department investigators to, quote, cease the investigation into the ambassador's conduct. It's just one of what another document describes as, quote, several examples of undue influence from top state officials. On Monday, a State Department spokesperson not confirm specific investigations.
I'm not going to talk about specific cases, but I can say broadly that...
And by the way, who you're listening to right now is a younger Jen Psaki, a State Department spokesperson, Jen Psaki. So she's definitely put her time in, you know?
The notion that we would not vigorously pursue criminal misconduct in a case, in any case, is preposterous.
No, it's not preposterous. It's not preposterous at all. So there you have it, from the White House to the FAA to the State Department. Here is a BuzzFeed News headline from December 1st of this year. Headline, CIA files say staffers committed sex crimes involving children. They were not prosecuted. Declassified CIA Inspector General reports show a pattern of abuse and repeated decision by federal prosecutors not to hold the agency personnel accountable. And it goes into the details that mimic everything else that we've been seeing elsewhere. Of course, we know things like the Finders cult, which was CIA-based, and things like that. All children, all trafficking, all mind control, trauma-based mind control. Much of it blackmail-related, others satanic, ritually abusive situations. It's just the way it is. It has been confirmed one way or another. The McMartin School is another thing that was denied for many years, but it's out in plain day. We can go anywhere with this. It's been burrowed into everything. So then here's one more thing. One more thing I want to bring on up. And this was from, 2019. Cindy McCain. Here's Cindy McCain, confused. John McCain's wife, Cindy McCain, confused as to who keeps protecting or who kept protecting Epstein. Here we go.
Combat against this issue. Are these power players a priority for us right now? Can we even touch them? Or is this a pipe dream that we need to address in the future somehow?
You know, it's like everything. It hides in plain sight. Epstein was hiding in plain sight. We all knew about him. We all knew what he was doing, but we had no one that was, legal aspect that would go after him. They were afraid of him. For whatever reason, they were afraid of him.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, someone said, BS, we're not afraid of you anymore, and what you're doing is not only wrong, it's illegal, it's, you know, all those things.
Yeah. One day, said, you know what, we're not afraid of you anymore, Epstein. We're going to get you. Her husband was one of the most powerful people on the planet. I just gave you a collection of articles that show you that every major authoritative government agency is afraid of crossing certain lines and righting certain wrongs. Why is that? You think it was because of this weird egg-headed Jeffrey Epstein? You think that this one guy, why? Because he had money? Money? That not very many people even know where it came from? You think this one guy, because he had money, was scary to the FBI and to federal authorities? And she says he was hiding in plain sight. We all knew what he was doing, so then he wasn't hiding. Hiding in plain sight is you are oblivious to something that was going on right underneath your nose. If they all knew what he was doing, then he wasn't hiding in plain sight. So this woman... of course, she's one of those Stepford Wives types. she was married to a swindler and a murderer for God knows how many years out of her life, and she's learned a thing or two from John, that's for sure. But you know, this is just it. This is the way of it. You see things disappearing that should not be disappearing across the entire spectrum of what we call American governance that's supposed to be there to serve our interests and to serve the interests of the greater good, whatever the hell that even is. So, you know, I hate when people say, you know, don't connect dots. This is bad enough. Don't make it a conspiracy. People like Jeffrey Epstein only exist through the conspiring of global power players. He only exists, especially for as long as he was doing his work. And this was work. Now, you would think things like this would be brought up in court, as circumstantial as some of this would be. But what's more circumstantial than a character witness? This should be a character witness for Ghislaine Maxwell, 100%, because she is everywhere that this stuff is going on. I mean, when Epstein was making those trips to the Clinton White House, Maxwell's in the background. She's in the background of every picture. She's hanging out with people like Jean-Luc Brunel, a model scout, ran a modeling agency that was started by Epstein. There's pictures of her with Jean-Luc Brunel taken at Little St. James, the same Brunel that Virginia Roberts alleged raped her at Little St. James, the same Brunel that's now in jail in France for numerous sexual assaults. Boy, Maxwell just has the worst luck, huh? Hashtag me too. Hashtag me too. So, listen, I understand. I understand that people, a lot more level-headed people than I, like Tracy, would say, I'm just going to reserve my opinions until after this is all done. But we have CIA shrinks helping the defense in this case. You have Jim Comey's daughter leading the prosecution. You have a quill and dagger judge appointed by Obama who's up for promotion from Chuck Schumer, who bizarrely and unprecedentedly sealed a lot of important sensitive information and identities at the request of Maxwell's attorney running the show. I just don't see how the hell this is going to go anywhere really significant, aside from maybe something being done in a way to appease the public in the same way that they threw Harvey Weinstein to the dogs to say, oh, look, you know, the evil has been vanquished. We found the head honcho in Hollywood. You know, there's just probably more out there, but none bigger than Weinstein. So this is where we're going with it, if that's just my humble opinion. Just my humble opinion, based on all of the news that is published every day. I don't have any inside sources. I don't have anything like that. I don't want any inside sources. But, you know, the smell is too thick. And that's all I have for you. So I invite you all. I invite you all to listen to me tonight. I have a wonderful guest on, quite frankly, Timothy Alberino. He's an adventurer, an explorer. A researcher, a guy that he's pretty much a modern-day Indiana Jones. We're going to be talking about a lot of different types of things, astronomical events like the Christmas Star, what was really going on 2,000 years ago around this time, the Three Magi. I want to talk about stuff like that and maybe go a little bit into the weird. It's a Friday night anyway, first Friday in December. I hope it was good for you. It was damn fine for me. And please share this show with all of your friends. And we will welcome Tracy back into our arms on Monday. So, from everybody over here to everybody over there, have a wonderful day and listen to us on radioinfluence.com and Spotify and all the other things that Tracy usually says. Now I'm going to go put some clothes on, and don't you be thinking about me. Later.